Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Welcome to the Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 229. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jectrow, Ballins. It's a fun episode ahead. Very fun one. We're recording the day early. So we unfortunately don't have a full docket of trailers to talk about, but we do have Birds of Prey. Going to be reviewing Birds of Prey, which... We'll be reviewing Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. We'll get Thank to you. That in a second.
Thank you.
And then we're going to be doing one that's been requested a long time. That we've never done. This is a rankings many people have wanted to hear. We're finally going to do it. And that's top five favorite movie music moments. So it can be part of a score, a song made for a movie, a song not made for a movie in a movie. I think one of the ones that we always talked about from one of our first year of the pod was Crash Into Me from Lady Bird. So that could be an option. Pick that. So anything, any movie music moment. Put out a tweet today. Got a lot of replies on that. People like this one. So yeah, we'll rank our top five favorite. Hard, easy to do because I had my five pop in my head pretty quickly, but there's still so many options. So many potential picks.
I agree. I had to go, I had to think about it. Normally I don't think about the list. I just kind of put them down on a sheet.
Your gain's on turbo mode right now.
Holy shit.
Yeah, your microphone's got gain like nobody's business.
Fucking pain and gain right now.
Okay, what about now?
Oh, way better.
That's pretty good.
Oh, I don't know how that game button. I don't know.
It's like the eighth time.
It's the damn dogs coming in.
Yeah. What's going on other than that? Anything happening? What are we watching? Is there anything that we haven't talked about that we're watching? I mean, I watched
Outsider still, man.
I tapered off on that. But HBO, I've watched the second episode of McMillions. It's a very, very intriguing true crime type documentary. It goes pretty deep into it. And they also talked about in the second episode, they talked about the old the gray M&M bag contest.
Oh.
Remember that one?
I feel like I could be the defense attorney for that dude.
Mm.
I'd just be like, look, Your Honor, victimless crime. Victimless crime.
Case That's closed.
It. You,
Case
you just closed. Sit back down. You're nope, like.
Nobody got hurt. So what? You didn't get Boardwalk. Whatever. Like, you still got McDonald's. You got what you paid for, didn't you? Victimless crime. Give this guy 8 months community service. No, what's going on with me? I got to say, I've been watching Marvelous Miss Maisel. I've been watching the latest season of that.
So, how is it?
Yeah, getting that going. It's I like it. I'm a big fan of that show. I like the what's that? Amy Paladino. I wish I knew her full name. Amy Sheridan Paladino. I'll look it up.
We don't watch the show, so we're not good for this.
No, she did. She did Gilmore Girls, I think. A show also known for its snappy dialogue. I love the back and forth of Miss Maisel. Like, humans don't talk like that, but it's a TV show. So I let it slide. The other thing that's going on.
I'm going to Costa Rica for about 4 days. to embed with NYCFC for their game in the CONCACAF Champions League. Have you ever been to Costa Rica Trail? I feel like it's a place you might have been to.
I have not. I've done a lot of I've done a lot of domestic travel, or continental U.S. travel, I should say. The only places I've been outside of the continental U.S. are London, Paris, and parts of Mexico, gotcha. and Hawaii, and so, Alaska.
Well, yeah, so that's actually a decent amount. But everyone I ask about it, it gives me like a different answer. They're like, some people are like, Costa Rica sucks. Other people are like, Costa Rica is awesome. You're going to love it. So I'm in between, and I don't know what to do while I'm there. I'm trying to find out. So if you're a listener and you know something cool to do or somewhere, something good to eat, something good to drink, like just hit up my line. Let me know what to do.
I'm sure, you know, it'll be good. It's like anywhere else. When I travel, I don't like to have an itinerary. I don't like to have a game plan. I like to do a lot of exploring, which I know a lot of people when they travel, they like to go and, you know, we're going to go to Paris and we're going to go in the Louvre one day and we're going to go to the Musée d'Orsay one day and we're going to do that. I just like to walk around. If I stop by something cool, I go into it. But my wife doesn't like that. So I don't know. We don't travel much though. That's something I always feel bad about because, you know, I'm 35. A lot of my fellow peers at the age of 35, they do a lot of traveling, but we just don't, we haven't had the time for it. So, you know, that'll be a regret when I'm dying.
So speaking of the travel end of it, I'm flying with the team on a chartered flight, which is something I've never done before. And that is maybe the most exciting part for me of the entire thing.
Are you going to have a half a Xan? Seven hours?
Until I land, yeah. I mean, I hope so. Honestly, if they offer it at the terminal, I'm definitely going to take it. Just, sir, here's your complimentary Xan for your chartered flight. Thank you, sir.
Oh, wow. This seems very illegal. Jeff, what's going on with you? Like, what's happening in Jeff's world? Did you get any new?
Just winding down from the Oscars. Nothing. Just working.
You feeling better?
That's all we do. Nothing exciting. Otherwise, I've watched the other HBO shows, the comedies. Curb Enthusiasm is funny, but seems a little forced in some spots. I also think Jeff Garlin forgot how to act in between the last two seasons.
Well, he's a caricature of, like,
yeah, the Jeff character is terrible. He's awful.
I like it better than the last season.
I would agree. I think it's funnier, but I think it feels more forced. But I'm glad you agree. Jeff's awful.
His wife, though, in the show steals the show.
Susie's always the fun. But see, Susie didn't forget how to be Susie.
No, Susie's Susie. I like it. Have you watched any more Avenue 5?
I did, and I don't think I like it. But I'm still. I will watch the remainder of the season, but I don't think I like it. I think Hugh Laurie is very funny, but I don't love the rest of it. And this may come to a surprise or come as a surprise to people listening. Don't love Josh Gad.
What?
Don't love the Josh Gad character. Isn't my thing.
I'm a snowman.
Is this the Hugh Laurie show that he's in space or is that a different show?
Yeah, that's Avenue 5. This is from Armando Iannucci, the guy who did
Veep, yeah.
Veep and Death of Stalin. I think there's a lot of funny parts, but I think some of the characters just don't work. And I think Josh Gad is one of the problems.
I think he should be the ship AI.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't like the space setting.
He's just not a funny Bezos character. He's just, that's not, that just doesn't do it for me.
I don't find space to be a funny setting. outside of Spaceballs and Galaxy Quest, like, what are the other space comedies?
Like space-based comedies? I mean, Star Trek had some moments.
I mean, I wouldn't put that in the top.
Yeah, Star Trek's a legendary show. With you know, I had moments all around. One of my favorite, one of the three Star Trek Next Generation episodes I've ever seen was when Picard was trying to defend Data's humanity.
Mm.
I like that one. That was good. That was thought-provoking.
TNG has a lot of great episodes. I watched that. Like, I rewatched the whole thing, or watched the whole thing through for the first time, I want to say 4 years ago. It's incredible. I can't really think of many other space-based comedies, though. I don't know why I'm blanking on this.
I just don't think there are many. But I don't know what it is.
It's just the setting in space. I don't know. I don't know if it's just not rooted in reality, and therefore I can't I don't relate to the humor as well, but it's not like I've ever gone to Russia when Stalin was alive and related to that. And I found that very funny. So maybe I, you know, I just don't know.
Just don't think the characters are hitting as good. That's my HBO update. McMillions, very good. Curb Enthusiasm, a lot of very, very funny parts. Jeff has really not been fun to me. I think that's, I'm not ruined it, but it's hurt the show a bit. And then the Josh Gad character, I think, is just really bad on Avenue 5. This episode is sponsored by the Barstool Store. And if you want to help out us, you should go buy a shirt. We got a Baby Yoda shirt. We also have a Parasite Movie Champion shirt, which I really like.
That one's awesome.
I think it's a very cool shirt. Show people that you watch movies. I think it's as simple as that. Show people that you watch movies. You're a fan of good movies. You're a fan of Parasite.
What about a shirt? What about this shirt? Before you get See Indeed, it's a picture of Paul Giamatti from the TV show Billions. But instead of Billions, it says Zillions. And underneath, he's holding a beer.
Perfect.
It says Zillions beer.
Do you think Billions would actually See Indeed us? I feel like that wouldn't happen.
I feel like Paul Giamatti would be pretty chill about it.
Yeah. Billions Showtime.
Yeah, I think Paul Giamatti would. I think
Paul Giamatti rules.
Yeah, yeah. Showtime, I don't think they would care all that much. No.
Free advertising.
Yeah, but you can also, hey Dana, our coworker Dana has a movement, the Zillion Beer Movement. He has been in plenty of our Barstool Store advertisements. He is Dustin Bongo.
It's kind of funny because Dustin Bongo is sort of his personality as Dana B.
Yeah.
Like when I wrote it, I was kind of like, I kind of modeled it a little bit of his sort of drinking mentality, and it just kind of worked out. So
yeah, if you've heard our Barstool Store advertisement skits we've done with Dustin Bongo, that's the character. That's Dana. And so get on that. He's tied it to a charity now. So buy yourself a Parasite shirt and a Zillion Beer shirt. There's actually a couple really nice Zillion Beer crew necks I like.
Ooh, what about a Dragon Ball Z one? It's Krillin Beer.
No, I don't know. You're grasping at straws on that one.
Nathan Fillion Beer.
Oh, it's just that would be the
his cheeks holding a beer bottle in between him.
That would sell maybe balls. One shirt, and it would go to him. He would buy it.
Oh, Nathan Fillion. That's one of the best parts of Big Mouth by far.
That's one of the best.
Oh, Nathan, follow me, please.
So the Barstool Store, yeah, you got to go there now. store.barstoolsports.com. What's the old promo code here? I don't have a promo code. There are promo codes. I think Honey works with that. If you want to do that, I've seen that. And Dana has been tweeting receipts. I think you can type in use the old Honey add-on. Barstool Sports Store. They got your winter gear. They got your spring gear. They got your summer gear. Buy all that now. store.barstoolsports.com. Buy something from us that would help us a lot, and then tweet us a screenshot of it, because then we'll retweet you, which that's validation.
We'll smash that retweet so fast, fucking head will spin.
It's the validation you need.
I feel like Nathan Fillion goes to Dave and Buster's and wins the big prizes and then just gives them to kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he wins not even just the Dave and Buster's. Like, he goes to street fairs and wins the ring game, which is it's rigged to lose.
Yes.
And he gives the big bear to a little kid.
Last time I was at SeaWorld, I think I bought like 250 of those rings and I didn't get a single ring on the thing. Oh. The last time I went to SeaWorld, I act like I go to SeaWorld a lot.
Yeah.
Beyonce would be furious.
look, I know it's bad, but the orcas are really cool. Free Tilikum. Rest in peace, Tilikum.
Major rip to Tilikum.
Final thoughts on the Oscars. The Oscars had its worst ratings ever. I think we talked about it in our post Oscars breakdown. We felt like the no host thing didn't totally work as well this year. It didn't quite hit like it did last year. What do you think? What do they have to do to fix this? I will say one thing too. Look, I don't care what you think about comic book movies, but if your award show is the movie award show and your movie award show, basically with the exception of the one nomination the movie got, has nothing involving the biggest movie of all time that was from that year, I think you're missing out. I think that's a missed opportunity. I think you could have done like a tribute to Avengers Endgame, a tribute to the Marvels, like something. You sold out enough as it is, because we'll talk about the other story with the Oscars in a second. You've done stupid shit like pissing off the entire visual effects community by having James Corden and Rebel Wilson make a mockery of that award. So like, maybe infuse a little Avengers. Maybe infuse what is popular in movies if it's not going to get an award, if it's not going to get a nomination. I feel like there's a couple obvious things that can be done to fix that.
But they pitched the award. Remember that award like a year ago?
Yeah, and then they got rid of it.
They're like,
they shouldn't have buckled. Then that's that they shouldn't have fucking buckled.
I'm
not even saying you have to give the movie an award. Just do something. I mean, a commercial, a social thing that goes around, like a tribute to Avengers Endgame. Boom, you tune in. We have a fucking coworker, Trent, really nice guy. ABC completely used him for ratings for The Bachelor because he picked up a suitcase and walked out of a room, and they promoted the shit out of it. And the ratings were up 13% last night. I'm not saying it's directly comparable, but Barstool, popular thing. People know Trent. People know Chicks in the Office. Okay, like that obviously helps. Not like he's a nobody. But I think you could probably boost ratings a little bit if you infuse the biggest movie of all time in your award show. Big whiff and missed opportunity. It's on a fucking Disney Network, too. Like, I think there's a very obvious thing that they could have done with that to at least give it a little bit of a bump.
I don't know what the right answer is because I'm firmly in the camp that, it's a business. They got to do something to bring in the money. But also at the same time, it's like I'm glad Avengers Endgame wasn't nominated for Best Picture.
Yep,
I don't think it should have been.
I know, but I don't know. Like,
actually, that has absolutely nothing to do with what I'm just saying. Just fucking talk about it.
You
brought Eminem in for five. Like you could easily have done. You could have cut down on a couple of the skits with the presenters, and you just do a little thing. You put them on stage. It's a very easy. Again, we just talked about same network. Just did something for how long was the thing on The Bachelor?
Like 10 seconds.
And the ratings were for sure boosted because of that. Because the people from the show went out and talked about it today on Twitter.
Oh, they said that. American Idol commercial with Tiny Dancer too.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So, have you ever seen a commercial that will make you watch American Idol less than that one? What about that commercial?
All those American Idol's been doing those types of commercials since I feel like the first season maybe. And they all post cringe when they do it. They lose follower.
I think at the end of the day, right, like it's an industry award. So I don't think they want to do too many things to like kind of placate the masses, I guess, by doing more popular like opinion stuff. And like, I get that. It makes sense. But at the same time, if the show itself wants to boost ratings, you have to do stuff like a few things, like make something a fucking fan vote, make like a most popular movie award, like they said they were going to do something like that. That'll at least get people's interest and like make them feel like they're involved and not make them feel like they're being looked down upon almost by like this award show. You do something to placate them and they will come and watch shit like this because they like seeing celebrities interact. That like, people will always line up to watch shit like that. And if you get them like more involved, they will 100% be like come in droves.
Even like the Eminem thing.
You're talking about fucking watering down an award show. You had Eminem perform on your stage.
No, but here's the thing about Eminem. Like ratings thing, like I get the surprise was cool, but maybe promote that. I just one of those things where it's odd to me. And this is not like a thing that just happened. They didn't just have bad ratings. Last year bumped a little bit. I would imagine a big reason why was one, Shallow, Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. That was for sure a big reason why. And then there was a Marvel movie involved. There's a couple very popular movies involved. So it's one of those things like you could have even promoted like Eminem performs the first, like throw something out there. Odd to me. It's one of those problems that I feel like shouldn't be a problem, but it is.
Some like 31-year-old like hears Eminem performs live 15 minutes, just like perks up from his twin size mattress on the floor. Just falls over into a pile of Bang energy drinks.
Mm-hmm. Like this isn't like CBS. Like, why is no one watching Bob LaHart's Abishola, right? Where it's like maybe just the content. I don't know if maybe that show's funny. I don't know. But it's not like, I mean, I feel like there's easy ways to just infuse it. Like the Grammys kind of changed their identity. I'm not saying the Oscars should be all performances, though there was a shitload of music this year. It seems like there's certainly ways to do it.
I think the challenge is balancing the self-aggrandizing attitude of the award show in general with, I think, like how they kind of perceive the Oscars to be, which is it's the most prestigious award show in America.
For sure.
And I think there's a disconnect between what they want the award to be and like what you're saying, Jeff, what they want the show to be. And like, you can't have the awards like all be like, you know, quote unquote prestigious without having some sort of like mainstream draw into the show itself. So like that's like, I get that point. I don't know what you would do. I don't know what would bring people in if they're like, well, we're going to talk about Avengers and Endgame for 5 minutes. Like, I don't know if that would be a draw. I do think the hosting thing, I think that maybe if they got back to like the Kimmel stunts, even though they're kind of I do think that brings a little bit of the intrigue back to it. I don't know what the right answer is. I'm not a television producer. I'm also in the right demographic that I enjoy the Oscars as is. So I don't have the answer.
So yeah. I just think it's a part of it. You just got to make people more involved, man. The biggest complaint you always see on Twitter, whether or not even just Twitter, but also most social media, and whether it's right or wrong, is they always just feel like they're being preached at. They feel like they're being made to feel almost like less than by these people, which, you know, I'm not saying that that's the wrong or right way to feel, but that's like a big complaint, and they just don't feel like they're involved. And like, rightfully so, they're not. This is, again, an industry award, but you need to find a way to get people to want to watch this.
I mean, man, make the popular vote a fan vote. I don't know. But even like, again, maybe that's just my TV mind. I know that that networks, and especially ABC, is someone who fucking worked there. They'll play up the smallest, tiniest thing to be the biggest thing. And you could have played up like a Avengers Endgame reunion on stage. Like, people are going to fucking tune in, at least for that part. Like, you're going to at least, even the tiniest thing. And it's maybe not just Avengers. It goes beyond that. You know, yeah. Harrison Ford on Luke Skywalker. I don't know. You can tap into the mainstream in small, tiny ways. Maybe they don't give a shit. I don't know. Maybe they just truly don't. But you would have to imagine eventually they do, because the Oscars typically is a big moneymaker in terms of TV dollars. So
I could see them. Yeah, I could see them giving. I mean, they really shouldn't have buckled on that. If they want to boost the award show, they should have just done like an achievement award. That's not like based off of anything other than like some sort of incredible cinematic achievement, which can be loosely defined year over year. And so this year could have been the highest grossing movie ever. Like, next year could be, I don't know, something else. But I think like that would at least give you leeway to craft that interest into the award show in maybe an organic way. But they're also, you know, they're protecting the Shield too. Like, that, I imagine that committee and whatever, like the people who make up the Academy, not including the actors who just now got to vote, probably, you know, they really like that. They really like being part of that exclusivity. I would. I envy people who get to vote on the Baseball Hall of Fame. I don't even care about baseball that much, but I just want to be a part of the club. And yeah, you kind of feel like you're on the outside when you watch this show, and more so than any other award show. So I get it.
Yep. Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting debate, but I also just, I don't know. Maybe I could very well be dead ass wrong, but I feel like this one isn't that complicated. Feel like they could probably throw a lot of ideas out there between now and November and come up with something that could at least boost it a little bit. I just feel like that this one, there's a lot they could play with here.
At least be funny. It was so unfunny this year. It was
very unfunny.
Get good hosts.
Yeah, I could see. I have a slight prediction for next year.
Are you talking shit? Well, are you talking shit about my boy Bruce Valanche? You're saying he writes like shit jokes? Is that what you're saying?
Shit ass jokes, drill. Shit right, jokes.
Jeff, what
slight prediction of The Rock. I don't know. I got a feeling DJ is gonna get a call for
DJ and Hart.
Give Kevin Hart a redemption. Never forget Kevin Hart's the reason why there is no host.
What's the movie that they're making a new movie, right? Like, they've now moved on from doing the Kevin Hart kind of duos with The Rock, and now they're doing Kevin Hart and Jason Statham. That's like a betrayal of the highest order.
Yeah, it is. It's tough. And also, I mentioned earlier, visual effects artists are not happy about Cats. The Visual Effects Society is focused on recognizing, advancing, and honoring visual effects as an art form and ensuring that the men and women working in VFX are properly valued. Last night, in presenting the Academy Award for Outstanding Visual Effects, the producers chose to make visual effects the punchline and suggested that bad VFX were to blame for the poor performance of the movie Cats. the best visual effects in the world will not compensate for a story told badly. That's accurate. On a night that is all about honoring the work of talented artists, it is immensely disappointing that the Academy made visual effects the butt of a joke. It demanded the global community of expert VFX practitioners doing outstanding, challenging, and visually stunning work to achieve the filmmaker's vision. Our artists, technicians, and innovators deserve respect for their remarkable contributions to film entertainment. Should not be presented as the all-too-convenient scapegoat and serves for a laugh. Also, they should have put at the bottom here, maybe next time, don't ruin the moment by having these two doofuses give it hand the fucking award to the people that are winning the award. Now for forever, when they show this moment to their kids and their grandkids, they're going to have to show the clip, and when they say the Oscar goes to, they have to skip through 15 seconds of Rebel Wilson and James Corden whacking at a microphone dressed as Bustopher Jones and Jenny Anydots.
And I noted that when we were doing the Oscars recap, like, can you just imagine being those editors? Like, your lifetime's like achievement being just kind of postmarked by the fact that you're sitting next to those two in their cat's outfits.
It's just so –
Still got the Oscar, though.
Sorry to be mad off – I'd be offended. I'd be like, oh, fuck yourself. Also, that statement is a lot, but I guess, I mean, that statement's from organizations and shit like that. Like, they're usually buttoned up. But they're not wrong, because while VFX was a problem – the other problem was the digital fur technology vision of the studio in the movie.
Looked like shit, mate. I mean, I think that they have a point. Like, they shouldn't be made the blame for that movie's failings. But it's one of the reasons I think it was bad. Like, the VFX looked like garbage. You're not, like, immune from criticism, like, because, like...
Yeah, but it just does sully the moment. I do understand the outrage they're mad.
They could have taken a swipe at Cats in a way that would have not insulted an entire profession, you know. Like, if they really wanted to make a moment out of Cats, which was legitimately funny, I thought that was funny. I'm of the opinion that we shit all over Cats, and it's okay to shit all over Cats, and it's okay to shit all over the visual effects. I don't think the highest body that recognizes the achievements of the film industry should be doing that. Not that I think there's like any major bad things to come out of that other than just a stupid joke out of it. But, you know, it just seems like the professional thing not to do.
So I just think that when I'm watching something like that, I took it almost, it's like lightly, it's a joke. It's like a very, very like nothing joke to me. And like, especially when like right before that, like I think two hosts before that, someone was saying, yeah, I saw The Irishman. I love the first episode to Martin Scorsese, one of the most legendary directors of all time. Like, you're saying who obviously took that in stride and didn't give a shit whatsoever. Is like I just don't understand. I don't get it.
Well, right? That's fair. Well, I can see both sides of the coin.
The people working on this movie, you know, they're not making Martin Scorsese. I mean, they're not getting the credits. They're not getting the best director nomination. Yeah. They're a cog in the wheel, right? And like
did a shitty job. Like, at the end of the day, right? I agree. They shouldn't be made the sole reason, and I don't think that's what the joke was. I just think it was a shitty joke. Like, yeah, the visual effects were good, right? Like, yeah, you get it. It was bad visual effects. But like, to take that so literal from that joke and to take it as this massive swipe against the VFX industry, like, number one, I think that's wrong. And number two, again, the visual effects were really bad. Like, really, really bad. Like, I really can't emphasize that enough. And they fucked it up in the fucking editing process and had to redistribute the movie.
Not disagreeing with that, but what I just don't like is there were people up the food chain who had more of a hand in Cats being the colossal fuck up that it was.
Yeah.
And yet nobody on that stage is going to dare call out anyone at that studio or anyone making the decisions on why that movie went wrong or who greenlit that movie or who said these visual effects were good enough to send out. My problem.
Yeah, but does that joke land if they go up on stage and say, yeah, we're mad at Franklin Boyce, production editor, producer guy that no one's ever heard of that greenlit a bad thing, right? Like, that joke doesn't land that way. The joke lands when you say visual effects, because that's what the people watching know it for being badass.
I don't disagree. I am simply just saying that I think that, you know, we talked about it before on this podcast. Like, there are so many people who work on things for hours and hours, hundreds and thousands of hours or whatever, and they do it for a flash of credit at the end of the movie. We don't often think of them. And I think it probably is a little like if you worked on something and you're like in a competitive industry where you're basically replaceable, like I just like I can kind of see where that would like piss you off a little bit. But at the same time, would it piss me off to the extent to where I'd be like, this is the fucking entertainment industry, right? Like people shit on everything all the time. People pan everything all the time. So I do think like having a thicker skin about it would be probably beneficial. But I also understand just, you know, that would probably piss me off because I'm sure like they had directions to do this and that, and they had quotas to make and they had a deadline and they had to get this out. And the whole thing was probably a mess. And it probably wasn't so-and-so's fault for, you know, fucking up cats and doing a bad job. They're probably a very talented visual artist, but now they're forever associated with that. And when you have a resume and you try to go find work on another movie and you're associated with that, like, I don't know how that plays out.
But you think like if you're whatever of like, I don't know, a fucking producer that's looking for an VFX team, you're going to be like, oh, this guy worked on Cats. Remember that Oscars joke that was 2 seconds long? And the only thing you do if you're a VFX guy writing a fucking dissertation like this, getting all pissed off, you're bringing more attention to it. And that to me, it just, again, from top to bottom to me, it just makes no sense because, again, they did a horrible job. Horrible VFX job. That's just true. I mean, you can be bad. You could do a bad job. And again, not necessarily saying it's their fault. Obviously, this is a mess from start to finish in multiple different areas, but you can acknowledge that it looked like shit. And number two, they're taking it so fucking seriously. And I feel like it was the most mindless swipe of a joke, like the most nothing of a joke that should not have been read into this much.
I see your point. I don't know. Like, I don't know how the decisions are made. And you're right. It probably, like, long run, nobody's probably really looking at your resume with the fine tooth comb because they're probably hiring you as part of a outsourced firm to do this and whatnot. But I can also understand, like, you know, you probably, if you work on something that long, you don't want somebody to say, like, oh,
I mean, piss me. I'd be very pissed off.
And that's all I'm saying. I like, do rational get or not.
I do get both sides, but I definitely see their side being like, what the fuck?
But again, imagine you're like a fucking Scorsese and you try to get this movie, The Irishman, made for 15 years and you finally got this giant cast you worked years and tirelessly to put together. And this guy says, yeah, your movie was really fucking long on this giant stage.
Excuse me, sir. That is a fallacy, a reductum el absurdo. Please restate your point without the straw man.
I'm just saying, man. I mean, everyone can be fucking criticized. They're not invulnerable from that. And at the end of the day, I don't think this is fucking with anyone's money. I really don't think this is going to mess with any of these VFX people's money.
I still land on the fact that if I was receiving my Oscar from those two fucking idiots, I'd be really pissed off.
That is the part I'll be mad at.
I would be mad on both sides because I'd be like, what the fuck, man? Like, really? But also, I'd be more so like, again, when I show this clip to my family for the rest of my life, I got to fast forward to these two idiots.
Who are they?
In the middle of like, there's nothing greater if you win an Oscar and they go, and the Oscar goes to blank name, like insert name. And in the middle of it, they're just fucking whacking at this mic. Like, God damn it.
Those are the people that deserve to be mad in this scenario.
I do love how quickly Taylor Swift pulled the ripcord on her involvement in this project.
Quickly out of there.
she saw like a screening
show
of the movie.
The Golden Globes.
Yeah, she was like, what's the bare minimum of my contractual obligations to promote this movie? Because I'm doing that. I've got my own movie coming out, and it's way better than Cats.
And it's just me, and I'm not a cat.
And also, there's a scene in it, I don't know if we talked about it, where a fan proposes to another fan in a meet and greet with Taylor Swift. It's the worst thing I've ever seen.
That doesn't shock me. I mean, that could not – I couldn't be less shocked. Yeah.
That would be a swift no for me.
Be more shocked. Yeah, less shocked.
Folks.
It looks like this engagement was tailor-made for this moment.
Oh, gross.
That's even better.
Spirited discussion on the Oscars. Good talk. We're done with the Oscars for a while.
24 carat ring.
I'm sure we'll talk much more about the Oscars when they talk about host in August or whatever. When they
should have Roseanne host.
Or 22 carat ring. Damn, Jesus, I messed Christ. That up.
Why? Who wouldn't like that?
Do you remember The Hunt? Remember that movie?
Yeah.
Well, it's officially going to be coming out now. They're going to go for it again. This is the gripes episode. My biggest gripe with this is in the marketing for this movie. They're saying the most talked about movie of the year. No, no, it's not. What a ridiculous statement to make. Regardless, The Hunt got a new logo, kind of a little bit of a rebrand, but it's basically the same trailer. I'll remind you what it's about. Loosely based on the 1924 short story, The Most Dangerous Game by Richard Connell, the film follows 12 strangers who mysteriously wake up in a clearing. They do not know where they are or how they got there. They discover that they have been chosen to be hunted in a game devised by a group of people from the rich elite. The hunters gather in a remote facility called the Manor House, but their sport gets derailed when one of the hunted, played by Betty Gilpin, fights back and starts killing them one by one. Going to be directed by, or was directed by, Craig Zobel, who did a couple things that I don't totally recognize, but he was a director of a few Leftovers episodes, which is tied into the fact that this movie was co-written and produced by Damon Lindelof. Also, Jason Blum involved, because it's a Blumhouse movie. This was initially, there was controversy over the idea, because there was a whole thing about hunting deplorables, and it was related, people tied it back to the 2016 presidential election. Then there was the two tragic mass shootings in Dayton and El Paso that were right around the marketing for this movie really ramping up. So they initially stopped marketing, then they just flat out delayed it. I believe the president criticized the movie. So all this controversy, it's now been moved to March 13th. Do we have any different opinion on it? I wrote a blog about it today. I have one slight differing opinion, is that I didn't love the initial concept, because I still have the first Purge in my head of just taking something political and making it just so annoying and obnoxious in a movie that it's insufferable. And I said that could be an issue here. But the way Damon Lindelof did Watchmen, and I thought all the political and stuff with class and race was handled perfectly from him, I back off a little bit on my concern over that with this movie, because I think maybe he could do it again with this. So this comes out in March. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to seeing it now after all this talk around it. But I don't know. Otherwise, my opinion, I guess, hasn't changed too much. Still like the cast. Glenn Howerton, Ike Barinholtz, Emma Roberts, Betty Gilpin, Hilary Swank.
Good. I mean, cast is probably the thing I'm looking forward to. I feel like, though, if you move your movie back in the wake of events that have happened, you shouldn't be allowed to use the movie getting pushed back as a marketing point in the future.
Yeah, I can see that, I guess. But I
don't know. It just it
makes sense they did.
Yeah, it makes sense they did. Like, I get why they did it. But at the same time, it's like they did it because they did it, and then they didn't, like, then you use it in the marketing and it's like the movie they don't want you to see or whatever. And then it's like, well, you basically, like, it's not that like anyone tried to like stop this from coming out, like, at least that I know of, on a very, like, you know, obvious level. It's just you know the national current in terms of like what people were receptive to in terms of pop culture at the moment probably wasn't conducive to a movie like this being released. I'm not like, I don't have a problem with it. It just, like, it just seems kind of like, that's the part where, like, before I remembered they pushed it back because of the shootings. I was like, oh, like, well, did they just can this to release it again in the future under the guise that, like, it was shelved for a while because it was too controversial or whatever? Because that, like, that's a marketing tactic.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't think they did. I don't think that was intentional at the time. But I do feel like, you know, some of that made its way into it.
They're doing a Gotti. They're doing a don't let other people tell you what to think. Just go see it for yourself.
Make up your own mind.
I think it's cool. I like movies where humans are hunting humans. That, to me, like, Dangerous Game shit, I love it. What was the one with Ice-T? Is it Surviving the Game?
Surviving the Game.
Yeah, I mean, that movie I haven't seen in a long time, but I remember thinking it was pretty damn good. So, I'm also, rest in peace, Rucker Howard, who I think died last year.
Was included in the that's my other Oscars gripe, by the way.
They clarified the Perry thing, I believe.
What did they say about, what did they say? I didn't see that.
Shoot, I just saw it on Twitter. Let me go look at it.
I mean,
yeah, like, they said there was a reason they didn't include him, Cameron Boyce, and Orson Bean, because all the submissions included on Oscar.com will be on the site throughout the year, and they'll be remembered in the Oscars.com gallery.
That's not a justification.
There's actually no, there is no one person from the Academy that could sit down in front of me, look me in the eye, and tell me why Luke Perry wasn't in that In Memoriam. And I would go, I get that. That makes sense. He was literally in a very good scene in one of the movies nominated for screenplay, best picture, just costume. He had one of the best fucking costumes in the movie. insane that he wasn't in it. There's no justification for no Luke Perry in that In Memoriam.
That exemplifies, I think, the disconnect between the industry and the home audience watching the television broadcast, because they should have execs and people who, like, you know, they have publicists in the In Memoriam. They should have those, right? But I mean, that's for the people sitting in the seats. I think, like, people watching at home, like Luke Perry, gigantic star, like you kind of, like, I don't want to say it's closure, but it kind of is closure seeing the In Memoriam segments, like, on these broadcasts. Like, I always feel like, I don't know, I get this sense of like actual, like, it feels like appreciation, and it feels like one last, like, you know, ovation for these folks. And so, like, you just don't like you don't like it anytime anyone gets snubbed. But to say we have like an explanation, like, the explanation is it's at Oscars.com. Like, no, that's not an explanation.
They have a full explanation here. So the Academy receives hundreds of requests to include loved ones and industry colleagues in the Oscars In Memoriam segment. An executive committee representing every branch considers the list and makes selections for the telecast based on limited available time. So they're, I guess, blaming Billie Eilish thing yesterday. They're blaming Billie Eilish. That's my take. That's my interpretation on this.
Sid Haig not in it.
Sing longer. It's your fault.
Orson Bean, yeah, a lot of people. Person who played Violet Beauregard, but the Luke Perry, that's a different one than Abe Vigoda. I think Lou is still one of the crazier ones, but this one's still weird just because he was in a movie nominated. Like, that's just strange.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's tough. Because I get it, but that again is just another example of just this fucking weird bureaucratic process behind every single maneuver at this show, and I don't ever want to understand, but I like complaining about it anyway.
Yes, it's very true. This episode brought to you in part by Let Go. We should just let go of the Oscars until August.
Love Let Go.
That's when they next talk about it. Let Go is fantastic. Fastest growing mobile marketplace to buy and sell locally. Safe too. I'll tell you that. It just feels
feel
simple and safe. If you're looking to sell, Let Go gives you an opportunity to turn your unused items into experiences. And if you're looking to buy, Let Go gives you access to a lifestyle that you maybe couldn't afford beforehand, from cars, sneakers, designer rents. It's a great place to buy sneakers. Let Go is the go-to place to help you, you know, through life changes, moving back to school, all that new, I mean, I don't know. They always put suggestions of things that you could change. You know, this is new parents, and I think, like, you're getting new parents, but I know they mean you're having a kid. So having a kid, you buy some baby stuff people are trying to get rid of. Like, I don't know, Trill, maybe you're going to, when your baby gets older, you sell some things on Let Go. Who knows?
You know what I'm going to look? I'm going to look for some LA Gear, LA Light sneakers.
Okay, look it up.
I'm surprised those haven't come back.
Is anybody selling LA Looks hair gel on Let Go?
Oh, what was that one hair gel brand? It was like Hair Sex something or something sex was in it. I remember sex was.
I don't know. I don't know.
Big Sexy Hair? Was that it?
I think it was, yeah, it might have been Big was Sexy
it?
Hair.
It is Big Sexy Hair. Yeah, I remember I would always go to, like, I don't even know, fucking Supercuts or some shit when I was growing up, and I would always see the bottles of Big Sexy Hair sitting there, and I'm like, ooh, this is naughty. It's naughty right here.
Is there anything more condescending to you than the television commercials for one specific chain of haircut shops?
Yes.
It's like, I get it. You're a guy. You don't like getting your hair cut. But come in and you can watch the game on television, and we got a hot towel massage, and you'll feel like a rock star. Oh, I'm like, I know, like, I like getting my haircut. I don't have to do anything.
When that hot towel hits the back of my neck and sends shivers down my spine, oh, it's uncomfortable to say the least.
They put the hot towel on, and you're just going, oh, oh, oh. Oh, what's that guy doing? He's getting the hot towel, baby.
Golazo!
That's literally what I do every single time I get a haircut. And my Albanian hair barber just is like, what the fuck is going on here?
I like to ask him to take a look every time they snip the scissors. Okay, oh, can I see?
Every snip, you're just like, oh, can you just turn it around real quick so I can see the back?
Let Go allows you to buy stuff online.
Best, fastest growing marketplace to buy and sell online.
Letgo.com/barstool. Tweet us what you're selling or what you're buying. I mean, I guess you could buy our shirts and resell them. I guess, I don't know. It seems illegal. Not illegal. It seems weird, but if you want to do that,
I got out of the sneaker game. They got too hard to manage. But then I got into selling booze and burger shirts on the gray market. It's actually I lost a lot of money.
It was a bad investment, I must say. Have a lien on my house now.
I got a fucking Nissan Frontier with a bed full of fidget spinners. If anybody's on Letgo, just hit me up. He's got to go.
I bet you can buy a lot of fidget spinners on Letgo.
I got to get a body into my truck bed. I really got to get these fidget spinners out of here.
Let's fire off a couple things here. First, look at The French Dispatch, the next movie from Wes Anderson. We're recording on Tuesday, and the trailer's coming out Wednesday, so we don't have the trailer. I imagine we know what we can expect. A lot of people in this movie. He released a poster. It's the most Wes Anderson poster of all time. It's supposed to look like a cover of the New Yorker magazine. And the New Yorker also had the exclusive rights to release the first images from the movie. It has so many people in this movie. Bill Murray, Frances McDormand, Tilda Swinton, Jeffrey Wright, Adrian Brody, Benicio del Toro, Owen Wilson, Timothy Chalamet, Lea Seydoux, Liev Schreiber, Elizabeth Moss, Edward Norton, Willem Dafoe, Saoirse Ronan, Christoph Waltz, Jason Schwartzman, Rupert Friend, Henry Winkler, Bob Balaban. I mean, Angelica Houston. The list goes on and on and on. And it's just, again, the pictures already look so Wes Anderson. I don't know. Do you guys have any predictions? Old classic tropes we might see.
Some predictions. I'm predicting.
At this point, if you're listening to this, the trailer's been released. So try to match up with what we're saying here. Maybe we got it right or wrong. I don't know.
Okay. Overhead shot. That's my first one.
Oh, is it? Wait. Well, I'm forcing you to be specific. Is it overhead shot of food or like writing utensils or?
I think whatever it is, it's not food in the trailer. Not food. An overhead shot, but not food.
Okay.
Okay. Here's mine.
Which, by the way, sorry. Honest Trailers, the best Honest Trailer on YouTube is the Wes Anderson Honest Trailer, where they go through all the classic tropes.
Oh, yeah. It's
very funny. Go ahead, Trill.
Int shot. Timothy Chalamet's character, Salmander, takes out.
Is that really his name?
No, I just made it up. I'm just telling you, this is how I visualize it. It's first shot of the movie. Salmander takes out a red worn tin case from a desk centered on him, and removes the contents of a sewing kit, meticulously placing every piece of the sewing kit in an organized grid out in front on the table in front of him. A song plays.
Okay, I have his real name. You want to know what it is?
What?
It's Zeffirelli. Zeffirelli.
I hate that water.
Fucking French Dispatch. Just name him Timothy Chalamet.
I like that reference.
Zephyr Hills Gang, rise up.
Zephyr Hills, my least favorite water. any other ones? Wright's character's name is Roebuck Wright.
But there's a subtitle to this movie on the poster. It's The French Dispatch of the Liberty, Kansas Evening Sun. Okay. The movie's just called The French Dispatch, but there's a subtitle.
It's a love letter to journalists set in an outpost of an American newspaper in a fictional 20th century French city.
Okay.
I love Wes Anderson so much.
He knows what he does, and he knows what he likes to do. I'm assuming he still likes to do it. That's why he's still doing it. But I like his movies. I thought the last one, the Isle of Dogs, didn't like that so much. Thought that was quite boring. But I'm all for him getting his usual gang of suspects back together, along with some new additions. I mean, Timothy Chalamet, right, was basically born in a lab that was intended for producing humans to be used in Wes Anderson movies.
So, yeah, this is going to be his first of many.
So I just think as long as it's not a bait and switch like the last one where he had a monster, like tremendously huge cast, and it was really just Bryan Cranston and the kid, like as long as it's not that, good. Just don't do that to us again, because that really pissed me off.
I didn't mind it.
I hated it. I mean, you're advertising like this giant, massive fucking cast, and like every other character other than that isn't named Bryan Cranston gets five lines. Like, come on.
That was big terrestrial. I disagree.
I mean, I like to see the cast utilized more for sure. But as a movie, I thought Moonrise Kingdom was quite Wes Anderson-y.
Yes, Moonrise Kingdom.
What was it called again?
Yeah,
Moonrise Isle of Kingdom. Dogs.
Oh yeah,
that's the one I was talking about.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, Moonrise Kingdom was good though. I didn't hate Isle of Dogs at all, but I was definitely. I mean, look, you're going to be compared to Fantastic Mr. Fox, which was fucking excellent.
Yeah,
and it just wasn't that. Though it did have that sushi scene, the overhead shot of their overhead shot,
great shot
of the sushi, which is a very very
good parodied.
Scene. Yeah, Isle of Dogs was just boring. I mean, that's the only way to explain it.
It did. It became a boring. Except for the part where I'm pretty sure this is the movie that when Ken Jack and I saw it, the woman fell down in the back of the theater.
Yes, she fell down in the theater.
There's one row of seats in the far, far back that has one step up and has no steps anywhere else. Just fell. And the contents, every content in the purse. She was fine, by the way.
Yeah, she got up and was fine. We're not just like ripping on the celebrity that got hurt. But
food, the contents hilarious. Of the purse.
A giant Hitachi magic wand came flying out, hit someone in the head. It was wild scene.
That trailer is out. I'm sending you
my favorite quote from the Darjeeling Limited. The only thing that stuck with this from this movie with me.
Thank you so much for that. I really needed that tonight.
Mark Ruffalo eyed for the Parasite series on HBO. We haven't talked much about this. An HBO limited series based on the film with Bong Joon-ho and Adam McKay. I mean, that sounds like, I mean, if you listen to this podcast, that couldn't be more my fucking cup of tea up my alley there. Adapting and executive producing is in early development. Bong has stated the series, also titled Parasite, will explore stories that happen in between the sequences in the movie. I think that's awesome. Mark Ruffalo apparently eyed to start, which is interesting because Mark Ruffalo, not Korean.
It's true.
This may shock you, but he's not Korean. I don't think that matters. That doesn't bother me. I thought that was interesting that he's like the first cast member that people are going to talk about, but I'd imagine the cast of the movie will be in this in some way, shape, and form.
It's really interesting. This must have been in the hopper for a minute. Then they just decided to use the momentum to announce.
Yeah. I think it's good casting, though, right? Because, like, Mark Ruffalo is obviously, I forget who we were talking to recently about it. I think Zdarsky, like, he's an activist. I think he's with the shit. And I think he's beyond being, you know, a great actor in his own right. I think that this could be, like, a pretty decent, almost sort of passion project for him in a way. And, I'm with it.
Yeah, I just, you know, but I trust in Bong, all things Bong. And so I don't doubt that this will be good. It will just be interesting to see how it plays out. Because, you know, Parasite was one of those things that is just so perfect. And we talk about it a lot. Look, I'm a big, like, you're not going to ruin the original by releasing a new thing. I'm not worried about them ruining Parasite. Like, that's not going to fucking happen. But the story that they told was just so perfectly told. I have a curiosity. It's to a positive to this project because I am genuinely curious if it intersplices with the movie, how they will handle that. Like I can't think of any way that would go.
I do think that this is a good combination of directors though, right? Or just a good combination of two people in McKay and Bong Joon-ho. I think they have a very sort of like similar vision in a lot of the ways that we make movies and TV and, or TV anime for McKay. And I just think that there is a very high ceiling for this, but also I agree with you, Trill, in that I'm kind of just scared, obviously, because both of us, we find, like, you know, Parasite perfect and we just don't want it to be ruined by anything. But I don't think that's...
It has a floor lower than the basement.
Yes.
Like, it could be a major letdown.
Yes.
Yeah, like it could be. I mean, it's not going to take away from Parasite. It'll be disappointing. It'll probably be like, okay, like, you know, you can't just take a property. I feel bad calling Parasite a property, but they're making it into this, so it's a fucking property now. You can't just take that, attach the name to it, and then replicate the magic trying to, you know, just do the movie only, like, on HBO or whatever. But at the same time, I think like you got to give the benefit of the doubt to the creators in these situations. Like, I feel like when somebody's proven themselves, they don't have to keep proving you every time they announce a project. Like, and I don't have to worry about it until it actually, if it turns out to be not that great, at which point I'll just be like, okay, like it was ambitious.
Yeah, there we go.
And I'll just hand wave it away. I'll be like, that was fine. Bong Joon, you know, he can do whatever he wants right now.
Agreed.
And I want to just kind of note something from Bong Joon-ho. This came via a Q&A. I'm reading this off Collider. He said, I had a great time working on Parasite, so I want to work on films on the scale of Parasite and Mother, one in Korean, one in English. The Korean project is kind of like a horror film. Of course, I'm working on it, so the genres will all be mixed, which is that's his thing. And that's I've been talking about it in the days since the Oscars. Like, that's partly why that movie is, I feel like, hype-proof, because there's so much going on in that movie in terms of like the type of movie that it is, and that's why it's so unpredictable and so engaging and so intriguing on so many levels. So genres will all be mixed. If you have to choose one genre, it would be along the lines of horror. And for the English project, it began with a news article I randomly came across on CNN in 2016. It's a small realistic drama piece. I don't know if you can call it horror, because in all my films the genre is ambiguous. You just kind of said it there for me, but if you have to describe it, it's horror, action, and a disaster that happens in Seoul, Korea. So that's obviously incredibly intriguing. Good stuff there. And it's worth noting too, there's a pretty major flood and occurrence and event that happens in Parasite that impacts the movie, but isn't like the central point. And also interesting that a lot of what Bong Joon-ho does has ties to climate change and all things like that. And Mark Ruffalo, obviously very involved in that front outside of acting. So there's a bit of a connection there.
And even Adam McKay, like I like this whole thing of, Not everything has to be draped in like subtext, right? Like, or a hard to decipher metaphor. I like directors and writers just coming out and saying it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't hide it. You're not tricking your audience, right?
Yeah. I enjoy that, because it's just like, I feel like when you do that, like a lot of these movies that rely on, and I'm not saying there isn't like metaphors and stuff. I mean, there are, but like, I feel like when you get down to in the weeds with your writing and try to like be smarter than your audience, it almost becomes like pretentious. And I think that was one of the things about like Parasite we loved, is that it was a grand movie, but at no level did it feel like inaccessible or hard to understand.
Yes, agreed.
And that's the same way with The Big Short, because I think you could easily make a movie about the financial crisis that tries to like put it in ways that maybe make it like a little more like cataclysmic. Whereas like Adam McKay was like, it's a bunch of fucking idiots and greedy assholes all got together, did this shit. Like it's just right there for you.
Yeah.
So I like that as an idiot. I like that.
Same. On a much different level. And we have a funny story to tie this in. Turner and Hooch getting a Disney Plus series starring Josh Peck, of Nickelodeon fame, mostly Drake and Josh. Also from, what was the Red Dawn?
Which stunk.
Which was a very bad movie. That was a Jeff D. Lowe 1 out of 100.
Stinker.
Very bad movie. I don't have much to say about this except for one thing. Ken Jack made a graphic for Instagram, as he does with all the news. He put it on our Instagram. It says, Josh Peck will star as Turner in the upcoming Turner and Hooch series, Disney Plus. Picture Tom Hanks, picture the original Turner and Hooch, picture in the top corner. It's a picture of Josh Peck. Lisa Lampanelli. Okay, I'm going to pause for a second, because you're probably wondering, where the fuck does Lisa Lampanelli come in here? Did you see this yesterday, Trill, by the way?
Come in here, folks. No.
Lisa Lampanelli shared the Instagram post. She was on our Instagram page, and she shared it as her story. So it was on her story, and then and she said congrats, and then tagged Josh Peck. I did not know they were friends. And then Peck shared, and didn't even share. He screenshotted her. He shared it. He shared. He just kind of zoomed in. He shared Lisa Lampanelli's story, sharing our Instagram post. And the funniest part about it is, Ken Jack, there's no swipe up or link to the blog, but you did blog it yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
It was I would say, less than flattering take on the news.
It was less than flattering. It was a little mean. I'll say that. I will say, I bookended the blog by saying I'm not mad about anyone getting money. So, you know, if you're getting work, I'm happy about that, Josh. That said, everything that Josh Peck has done after Drake and Josh, I have hated with a fiery passion of a thousand suns. And that includes Red Dawn. That includes everything he put on Vine because he was a horrid, horrid Viner. That includes his YouTube stuff. All of it, I have hated. Very happy for him getting in shape. Very happy for him moving on with his career from Drake and Josh. Very happy for him getting his own series on Disney Plus. Very, very happy on that end. But that said, everything he's done since Drake and Josh, man, fucking, I wish I could wipe it from my memory.
Did somebody send? She doesn't follow us on Instagram.
They had to have.
She follows Bard. So somebody that is friends with Lisa Lampanelli sent her our Instagram and said, "Did you see this? Josh Peck is going to be in the Turner and Hooch Disney Plus series." And she just loved it so much. I don't know. It's one of the stranger. We actually had two in the span of 12 hours because I tweeted. I basically redid every clip I did last year on Oscar Sunday because they all did well last year. I'm like, I want to fucking do them again. Whatever. Let's fire them up again. And I did the clip of Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling presenting at the Oscars a couple years back when The Nice Guys had come out. And it was just a very funny bit of them at the Oscars. And I said, this is proof that there needs to be a Nice Guys too. And Shane Black and Russell Crowe retweeted it.
Kings.
So that's I like hearing that. Maybe they're thinking about it. We just talked to Matthew Bomer about it. And he's in the movie. He's a villain. He didn't die his character. And he said, I would. He goes, yeah, it's a good movie. So I don't know. The Lisa Lampanelli thing was incredibly surprising.
Caught
me off guard.
I'm just sad because I just now realize that Ken Jack never walked the earth at the same time as Hooch, a.k.a. Beasley the dog.
Beasley the dog.
1978 to 1992. So he had a really long life for a Mastiff. He got to see it all, man. He got to work with Tom Hanks. There's nothing better than that. I mean, you can ask anyone. Tom Hanks is a joy to work with. And I bet if you're a dog, he's extra nice to you. So imagine how nice that is.
That's going to be fucking awesome.
Imagine how fucking nice Tom Hanks was to that dog. Now, I'm wondering if they got it. With a name like Hooch, you got to do a Mastiff again, right? You can't make it like.
Oh, if it's a different dog, what are you even doing?
They're fucked if they try to do a different dog.
Yeah, it's got to be a Mastiff, right? That's what it was.
Have to. Absolutely has to be a Mastiff.
Mastiff. I got to know what Beasley the dog was. He was a French Mastiff, yeah.
Okay. Well, yep. Rest in peace to the dog.
The French Dispatch is actually about Hooch dying.
We also have news of
Dispatch. Make it sound like he got killed.
We have news of Evel
Knievel. Gotta watch the movie.
An Evel Knievel biopic played by Leonardo DiCaprio. That sounds right.
Yes.
Scripted by The Wolf of Wall Street, screenwriter Terrence Winter. But I want to get to our last bit of news here because it ties into our review, which we're about to get into. Birds of Prey. Birds of Prey, what was it known as, Trollbones? Please say what the full name of the movie was.
It was Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Well, long title, right? Not the longest of all time, not by a ton. But the interesting thing about Birds of Prey is, obviously, the big selling point is that Harley Quinn is back. Margot Robbie is Harley Quinn. She's the last word in this title. The title commonly used is just Birds of Prey. It did not have a good week at the box office. When Trill says have a good week at the box office, it did not.
It didn't heed my advice.
It lost to Shazam by $20 million to be the lowest grossing DCEU opening of all time.
Woof.
Warner Brothers. Now remember, their first trailer was not well received. Warner Brothers decided, well, there's only one way to fix this. Now, days after the movie has been released, we must change the title. The movie is now called, as we mentioned earlier in this episode, Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. Harley Quinn : Birds of Prey.
That makes a lot of sense because Harley Quinn's in it.
It's Birds of Prey. I'm also surprised. How about Harley Quinn's Birds of Prey? I don't know.
It's smart. It reminds me of the old PMT bit with Robert Griffin III when they said, stop calling yourself RG3, start calling yourself Robert Griffin. People will forget your failings, and now they're like, who's this Robert Griffin guy? Do the same thing with this movie, and it'll eventually work out.
Well, I think everyone's trying to figure out why this didn't do as well as it probably should have at the box office. And I've seen some folks speculate that the R rating didn't help it. But then I've seen the counter argument to Logan and Deadpool doing well. Although I would argue that I think the R rating was more integral towards those movies' general enjoyability than it was towards Birds and Prey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this R rating felt, and we'll get into this, R rating felt a lot more like violence than anything else, which yeah. I guess those other ones did too, but this was just like, well, I don't know, it was different violence.
I mean, but you know, like it's a selling point for Deadpool. I mean, the R rating was violence, but then it was also like the pegging scene and stuff like that. Like, you know, just the sexual stuff, I think, gets you a bigger knock with the ratings board than the violence does in a lot of different cases. But Logan, you know, violent too. But I don't know if that was it. And I do think we talked about it last time. Like, you know, Harley Quinn is the biggest name in this movie. So I don't blame them for wanting to say, hey, this movie has Harley Quinn in it, in case you didn't know. But I feel like anyone who's a fan of Harley Quinn and recognizes this would have known that. They would have been aware of this fact. Because it isn't like this was a secret. It was a marketed movie. Was it as marketed as well as it should have been? I'm not certain. I do think I prefer the long title, this long, stupid title, over Harley Quinn Birds of Prey. I don't know. They did it because they said, yeah, we got to use the biggest superhero property in this movie. It's Harley Quinn. And we got to put that in the title in hopes that people will see that and go to the movie, obviously. I don't know if this movie will have legs. Hopefully it will. Because I do think it deserves to be performing better than it is. I don't think it deserves to fail, because I don't want to discourage, like, you know, things like this from being made. But at the same time, it's like, it doesn't seem like that seems like you're putting a Band-Aid over a gaping leg wound.
Well, like, yes. like a small Minions Band-Aid.
Yeah, a small little hastily drawn crude Suicide Squad like smiley face.
Mm-hmm.
Hello Kitty, Betty Boop. Did you ever understand Betty Boop?
I never got it.
She was hot.
Nike just released a brand new line.
Smoke show of the week, December. Betty Boop.
I mean, no. There's a very like bougie Nordstrom that opened up in Manhattan by Columbus Circle and Central Park, and they have this Nike store that's like it's a very fancy women's Nike store, and half of the products are Betty Boop Nike things.
Who the fuck is buying that?
Don't trust that Betty Boop. See, she'll double cross you.
Most action she saw since like World War II. She's taking on fucking bombers.
Betty Boop, her signature oversized head.
The original Funko Pop.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you go back on Twitter and just tweet that, please? Just tweet Betty Boop, the original Funko Pop.
Come on. That can't be the one. To break
what a comeback that would be.
No.
Can I tweet that with just in quotes?
Yes. Yeah, okay. that can be our preview of the episode.
The picture of her head.
So do you want to roll right into the Birds of Prey?
So here's the thing. Birds of Prey, we'll talk about it now. It's open season on Harley Quinn when her explosive breakup with the Joker puts a big fat target. It's the weirdest synopsis ever read. Big fat target on her back. Unprotected and on the run, Quinn faces the wrath of narcissistic crime boss Black Mask, played by Hugh McGregor, his right-hand man, and every other thug in the city. But things soon even out for Harley when she becomes unexpected allies with three deadly women, Huntress, Black Canary, and Renee Montoya. I mean, she becomes allies with like four people. But we'll get into the movie. Stars Margot Robbie, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Rosie Perez, Journey Smollett Bell, Hugh McGregor, a handful of other people you may or may not recognize, kind of character actors. Again, did not perform all that well at the box office. Actually, I would say performed pretty not great at the box office. At the beginning of this movie, Trill just sent a photo to our group that we're not going to talk about, but I just
that's blacklisted funny. Cursed photo, you asshole.
Very funny. I did not like the beginning of this movie. I thought it was a mess. There's a point in this movie where it kind of resets things, and it almost felt like the beginning of the movie was a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
It's very bizarre. It's bizarrely put together. I think it looks awesome. The look of the movie is very cool. I think it's colorful. It pops. It fits the character. I think that Margot Robbie is great as Harley Quinn.
She's fantabulous.
She's fantabulous. Exactly. The problem with this movie is that I don't think the villain and I don't think the supporting characters are all that great. I think Trill dislikes Black Mask more than I do. Because I like how he was. I like Ewan McGregor's performance. There's a scene, and this isn't spoiling, there's a scene where he's on a couch and he's getting like Botox. And I think the way he acts in that scene is great. Like, I love how angry he gets. I love his performance of the character. I think it's a terribly written character. No one in this movie is fleshed out except Harley Quinn. And it just feels weird. There's a lot of this that I like. There's a lot of this I think that's funny. I don't think it's bad. I just don't think it's all that good. Like, for example, recent DCU, I don't think it's anywhere near as good as Aquaman. I don't think it's as good as Shazam. And I think that's a bummer because I would actually say Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn is better than Billy Batson from Zachary Levi and Momoa's Aquaman. I think she's very, very good. And I think this is not the best vehicle. And I don't know what went into it. I don't know about reshoots and things that are changed. But the beginning of this movie kind of sets this weird tone. And it almost like a waste because it could have established much more than it did. And it could have fleshed out even Black Mask more because all we really end up knowing about him, again, this is not a spoiler. We talk about this trailer. Is he just fucking, he's a bad dude, cuts faces off, right? Mm-hmm. I think Black Mask, I was surprised to watch this movie after reviews had come out when people said Black Mask was awesome. And I was like, I don't know about that.
Black Mask was, so I didn't
mind. Oh, by the way, my score, I'm sorry, I should give my score. My score for this movie, I've kind of gone back and forth because I really don't dislike it. But I'm going to have to land on I'm going to go with a 68. A 68.
Hmm. I'm at a tough place cuz I'm kind of with you. So there were parts of this movie that really dragged. But I will say some of the better action sequences from any of the DC movies. The prison fight in the water I thought was really slick. I love the powder beanbags or the exploding mm-hmm. beanbags.
Very cool.
And that was like the cool thing they did with the movie that felt Suicide Squad-y, but differentiated a little bit because I think it was, you know, not a total shit movie, unlike Suicide Squad, is that they really used the color palette of Harley Quinn in the actual movie itself. I felt like, or at least this DC extended universe version of Harley Quinn with the red and the pink and the blue explosions. It looked like, you know, Kacey Musgraves' album cover. It was really cool. I mean, I thought those action sequences were really neat. The problem is outside of Harley Quinn. I didn't think they did a good job of characterizing the other characters I cared about, aka the Huntress. I was really stoked for the Huntress. I don't feel like the Huntress got enough attention in the story. Certainly not as much as I felt Cassandra Cain got, which I didn't like that character as much as I think like the Huntress, just because the Huntress has a crossbow or whatever. Like I get why the character needs to be in there. And it was fine. And then I thought Black Canary was fine too. Like I thought she was probably one of the more fleshed out supporting characters in this movie because she was given a lot of the screen time and she did a good job with it. But that turns us over to what you're saying about Black Mask. Didn't have a problem with Ewan McGregor before he put on the mask. Then he put on the mask and I was supposed to take him seriously as a villain after he almost played it like just this egotistical, over the top, piece of shit guy. And now I'm supposed to be like physically imposed by him and his thugs. Like it kind of felt like you knew the Birds of Prey were going to wash him. I thought they did a good job of making that in fight feel very intriguing, but ultimately you never really felt, and this is the way I always feel about these DC movies. You never feel like there are really stakes on the line because you always feel like they put in these dork ass villains who, you know, they're just going to trample over. And to be fair to Marvel movies, that was, you know, a lot of the Marvel movies were that way too. I think that's probably the hardest part about making a comic book movie, right? But Black Mask, it's, yeah, that's a complaint for outside the movie. I've gone up the more I thought about it. I think part of it was after I watched it, I felt like based on the reviews, it was going to be great. I felt like it was going to be excellent off of what I was seeing. And then I went in and watched it and it felt like it was a 65 for me, which is not a horrible score by any mark, but I really felt like this was going to be the one that was going to kind of like get me onto like, okay, like they can make these DC movies now and they're getting better. Make no, there's no doubt they're getting better at doing these. Like, this was one of the better ones to date, but there just was something there missing by way of the story. You got this bullshit. I mean, just any story involving a fucking diamond, like anything involving a diamond. Can we just not do a goddamn diamond anymore? Ever?
That's, yeah, I'm on board. Okay.
And, you know, that basically becoming, okay, like, yeah, find the diamond and that leads you to this character and then protect the character. And, you know, that does have some development for Harley Quinn, which was fine. But ultimately, you felt like the movie was a setup for something else, which is what it was. But I think, like, you, because of that, you ran into this conundrum where it's like, do you give more screen time to this explosively cool Harley Quinn character played by Margot Robbie, or do you set up these other characters who are cooler in their own right, but not really what you wanted to see? And I think that's the reason why they changed the title, because you want to see Harley Quinn and you want to see Margot Robbie crush it. And she does, but you almost wish she got more of her.
Mm-hmm. No, I echo a lot of what you're saying. It's a 69 for me, 1 point above Jeff. And
wait, what's your score, Trill?
65.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I was
shitting on it last night. But I part of it is like, you always got to line up your expectations. So whatever. So, okay, go ahead.
But yeah, no, it's 69 for me. I echo a lot of what both of you said. You hit on a lot of my points that I've written down. I do think that the first act is just way, way too chaotic. And the second two acts really don't make up for it very much. And again, it's kind of part of like what they tried to do. I think it was purposeful. Like, they want to get you to behind this sort of like chaotic brain of Harley Quinn, like how she's like, obviously very like, you know, disturbed brain, whatever you want to call it. And they're trying to make it like you feel that chaos. And like, it was chaotic, but not with purpose. Like, it wasn't comprehensible at points. Like, you tough to see where they were going with it. And I don't really think that there was any characterization given to any of the other birds of prey, like Trill was saying, which is kind of frustrating, because you want to see more about these other characters, not just because we've heard a decent amount about Harley Quinn. Like, we know, I would say, a little bit about her. But this movie was basically her and everyone else was just like dressing. Like, they were like, nobody else really seemed to matter in this movie whatsoever, which is fine. Like, that's totally like, if you, that's the movie you want to make, that's cool. But I was expecting more of like an ensemble effort. And to that point, I was just kind of bummed out. I think all the acting was fine, with the exception of maybe McGregor. I don't know if it was Ewan McGregor's fault or the writing/directing's fault, but like, I really just didn't connect with Black Mask at all. I didn't think he was very cool. He was just like an asshole. With no real, like, I would say, scary part about him. And it's like you said, Trill, like, they just kind of set him up to get washed, and like, you never really felt at any point that he was going to win. And you just like, I don't know, just it was kind of a bummer. And yeah, I think you guys basically hit on the rest of my points. There's just kind of disappointing. And I think it was more, maybe even more disappointing, just because the critics gave it like a pretty decently high score. Like, it started out at a 92. I think it's now at like an 80 or something. That, to me, it's just not an 80. It's not really anywhere near there. Like, for me, that's like Wonder Woman, stuff like that. Like, you could put probably up at like the high 70s, low 80s. Like, this isn't as good as Wonder Woman. And it is just kind of, it's a bummer. I'll just say that. I was very bummed out after I finished watching this.
It came out, composite score on Rotten Tomatoes, was 6.8 out of 10. And on Metacritic, it's a 61. So, I mean, it seems, I don't think we always line up with that. I think it's always typically here in that area. It's always in like a very small portion of it. But that's kind of where that's kind of where I land. We're gonna talk spoilers here, so let's do spoilers for Harley Quinn.
Shit.
To avoid spoilers for Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey, skip to 1:34:21. I got nothing about Guy Fieri here, except we love you. Come on the podcast, please.
All right, we bleeped out the part where Trill said spoilers. So what did you exactly say? Can you say it?
I was just saying, I thought it was cool the way Black Mask got exploded up with the grenade at the end. I don't know why they do that, because like, don't you kind of want to have the ability to bring the villains back and like recycle them?
One would think
cool too. The Victor Zsasz guy was a cool villain. I was reading about him after the fact. He seems awesome. It's a goodness assassin that etches the shit into his body every time he gets a kill, and like, he's just kind of like this weirdo that, again, is just kind of like dressing to the movie and just gets unceremoniously offed. And he's like, not a major villain, but like a pretty popular minor villain.
Yeah, I mean, he's a He's like a minor villain in like the Batman video games that I enjoy so much. So it's like that's something I was like, oh yeah, like I know these guys. But also, you know, I'm complaining about the villains and then I'm saying, well, they should bring them back. So like, what do I really want? I don't know. I think ultimately, like they, I don't know if there was like a way to do it, like without a villain. And I don't know if it was like kind of maybe pitting the characters against each other more at the end. And then like, I guess it being less about like confronting Black Mask. Like, I don't know if that would like work out well, but like, I almost feel like he was just kind of, I mean, he was just in there to keep the gears moving. But the turn when he put on the mask, it was supposed to be, I mean, I felt like it was telegraphed to be this super imposing thing, but it was just like, he looked like a dork with it on. Mm-hmm. And this is just after he was, you know, playing this dude who was getting Botox. Like, I don't know. Like, that's not like terrifying, and maybe he wasn't supposed to be, but like, you know, when you get to the end and they're congregating around there and they're up in the clock tower or whatever that was, like, you want to at least feel like he is like a threat in and of himself, right? Not just his goons. But and that's a minor complaint. Ultimately, what it comes down to is, you know, the birds of prey, right? So you got Rosie Perez. She was Renee Montoya. And then it was, who was Black Canary again?
Black Canary was played by Journey Smollett-Bell.
Yep. And then you had Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Huntress. And then I think it was Ella J. Basco as the Cassandra Cain character. And so, you know, you're trying to set them up. The issue with that is that I liked Black Canary and I liked the Huntress, but I don't think we got enough about the Huntress. Rosie Perez did a fine job. I just didn't like that character too much. I feel like that trope of the detective who like has had it up to here with the chuckle fucks in the police department
and is an alcoholic.
Yeah. And wants to like blaze her own path. Like I feel like that's been done so much. And you know, for a movie like this, like, I at least felt like they could have made him a little more weird. You know, Harley Quinn's pretty fucking weird. And they go to great lengths to talk about like how she loves an egg sandwich so much and how she'll blow up a chemical plant because of the Joker. And then they just like, the birds of prey end up being like, you know, in this movie, they end up being a kid and a detective and then a mob boss's daughter. And Black Canary was pretty cool. Like, I thought she had a good backstory. So like I expected like a more eccentric group of heroes. And what I got was like, I felt like you got a pretty good group, but like ultimately I don't feel like there was enough behind them. Like the Huntress backstory was like incredibly like once I realized that, I'm like, oh, come on. Like her ending up being in like on the mob boss hit, like, which I guess it made sense for her revenge. And the character was fine, but like she played it in an awkward way of like kind of just like I'm just kind of learning this or whatever. But I don't feel like she got enough screen time for what she needed to do. Like as cool as like Mary Elizabeth Winstead is firing a crossbow, like I wanted to see more of that. I wanted to see more of the characters together. And you know, you got your Avenger style shot near the end or something like that. Like, you know, they came together at the end to do it. But like, that's kind of what I'm saying is like, it would have been nice if they would have faced off against each other and then come together. Cause at least you had some like interaction and you got to maybe see Black Canary's superpowers a little more. And the whole like roller skating thing. I don't know about that. Like, I agree with you there. That was like, that was at least different. They're trying to go the Skitchen route of, you know, having her tag along on the motorcycle. And I thought like once she got into the car, there was some like cool stunt coordination being done with like the gymnastics or whatever. But when she was being blasted by the sound wave on the roller skates,
it looked so lame.
It was the fakest thing I've ever seen.
So bad. So bad. I think that we're shitting on this movie a lot. The one thing I just want to point out is that I do think among the DC movies, this is probably some of my favorite actual action sequences, like fight sequences as far as they go. I think it looked awesome. Like hand-to-hand combat, Harley Quinn going beating up these thugs looked really fucking cool. She's doing all these like kicks and all this like flip angle shit and like they're rotating the camera with her doing these twists. I think it all looked really, really good. And I do enjoy, I enjoyed the prison sequence where she's shooting up like the what do you call it? Like the riot grenade things that explode and the glitter and all that. That looked really cool and it was awesome. That all was really good. I think they just should have done a much better job storyboarding this and not to go too far into the shitting on part. But I really was just kind of bummed out by, again, the characterization, just how they weren't really able to weave these characters together at all. And like, what, they're all together in the same room for what, in the closing 10-15 minutes of the movie, if that. It's the first time they're all together at once. And that's just like, you kind of, you build up this movie, right? As like the birds of prey, like they're all going to be a thing, and you don't get them together until like the last 10-15 minutes. And they just like, they beat the shitty bad guy that none of us really thought was going to do anything in the first place. So it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah. And this film also had to work against the current of getting out from underneath the shadow of Mr. J. Right. Mm-hmm. And they spent a lot of time doing that at the start, which
say
is
that again,
Mr. J. I don't know. That's British. I don't know what I'm doing here, but I think that's what Jeff was talking about is there was a lot devoted to the breakup at the start, which I get you had to do, but I almost just wonder if you could have just done it 5 minutes. Like I think
it's a meta movie in some senses. And I feel like there's a way they could have done it like that. And the Mary Elizabeth Winstead character Huntress, I think was a very cool character. Everything she was in, you guys said this, so I'm not saying anything new. Everything she was in, I liked. Like everything. I was like, oh, this is fucking badass. Right? Like very cool character. And I think that there were certain characters focused on, Troy, you mentioned Black Canary, like kind of dipping back, like kind of diving into the past. I like the format of how they did some of that with the flashbacks. But so much of it was like, the chaos was cool too. I like that they added some chaos to this movie because like Suicide Squad felt very not chaotic and very dumb and didn't play into kind of the craziness of the concept, but it was almost too much. And I feel like there was time wasted in certain areas where they could have maybe fleshed out even just one other character more, even just one main thing. Like, again, it just, the support around Harley Quinn here is the weakest thing. That's the thing for me. That is the weakest thing, and there's really no support for a character who is pretty strong and well done. And that's a shame because you just have no connection to them. You just don't care about most of them. You don't care about any of them.
Well, yeah, and to your point, like Renee Montoya and Cassandra Cain were both tropes, mm-hmm. which like I don't think that did it a service because Rosie Perez and I forget her name. I thought they did a good job in the role, but like, you got the brash detective who's tired of it, and then you got the street smart kid, and it almost just felt like you have these other like Harley Quinn really out there characters, Black Canaries, like I wouldn't say she's out there, but she's like fucking, you know, she's a badass, like you really like them. It's like you almost wish they would have gotten out from like underneath these like well established things we've already seen before. And this isn't the only movie that's guilty of it. Like, there's a reason it's a trope, right? I'm not saying, like, you know, Birds of Prey is unique in this aspect. But when it comes down to it, it felt like a lot of it was tying in scenes of Harley Quinn talking to people, which you wanted to see. Like, I did like her conversation with Black Mask when she was trying to convince him to let her live, how she switched from, like, thinking, oh, there's no way he's going to fucking kill me, to, like, I need to kind of bargain for my life here. And then the fight sequences, and specifically the prison one where she does this really sweet takedown move. Mm-hmm. And then also the one with the baseball bat was really slick as well. Like, I liked her getting the old Louisville slugger back in her hands.
Yeah, and the Coke shit. Like, she takes a sniff of Coke and goes nuts. Like, that stuff's all cool. Do more of that. And yeah, you could. There's a way to make this cohesive and chaotic at the same time. And I just don't think they found that balance very well, especially not in the opening hour or something was just really rough with that.
And that's where I feel like that's where the R rating was wasted. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, they tried to fit in F-bombs and bad words here and there and get that to an R rating, where like the Coke stuff probably got it to an R rating. But if you're going to do that, like do more of that, like just go get weird with it.
Go
and,
in.
Like, part of the movie was like wanting to get weird with it. But then the other half was like, oh no, like here's the detective who's had it with the fucking bureaucracy of the police force. And here's the kid who, like, you know, is wiser beyond her years and smarter than the old people. And then what was the other one? Like, then you have the old like stairwell conversation. That's another trope between Cassandra Cain yes. and the kid. Like a movie, you know, some of these movies and TV shows, like you had this in the first season where like, yo, you always got to have the person talking to the kid in the stairwell, 'cause the kid's like, you know, down on something. And it was like, some of it was like, you know, for a movie that like, I think had permission to really kind of fucking do some like weird stuff. And like, I think they did it. Like, I think the egg sandwich thing, like, had the potential to be like major 2010 epic win bacon cringe stuff, but I thought it was funny, like just in the way it fit in with the movie and the way it fit in with the like characterization of Harley Quinn. It's like, yeah, she probably would be the thing she cares about most in the world at that point in her life. Like stuff like that, I think added heart to the movie. And then by the time you got to the end of it, it just became more paint by numbers. And it was just kind of disappointing to see, because there were flashes of some really, really fun fucking shit in this movie. And then a lot of the other stuff was like, you know, pretty standard boilerplate.
It's tough. This is a tough one, because I hate reviewing these where we can say there was a lot of good, but it was unfortunately dragged down by, I don't know if it's overstuffing it or not paying attention to the right things. It's one or the other. It's definitely one or the other, because it's a bummer, because there's a lot here I did like. Again, the action, Kendrick, you said it's some of the best action in any of the DCEU movies. Hands down, it saved the movie.
Yeah, if the fighting in this movie was bad, then this would have been an absolute and total dud. And it just got to get better storyboard people and better, I would say, like maybe even joke writers and stuff in DC Universe stuff. Because like that's where at the end of the day, it really just kind of like, I've said that at the end of the day like 20 times today. That's my new Jard. But yeah, so like you really just need to get, like if you want to match Marvel or exceed them, you need to try and either do what they do better or do your own thing. And they do a weird mix of both, like trying to do the dark shit, obviously with their early stuff, and then trying to almost like poorly do imitations of some Marvel stuff. You have to pick which way you're going to go and kind of stay in that direction. I think Shazam was sort of a positive step there, right? Kind of getting out of that dark shadow of like Snyderverse stuff. And they just kind of like backtrack and do more of the weird stuff with movies like this, and just not in a good way. This is kind of a bummer. I'm just hoping at this point, I think Suicide Squad is going to be really good.
Curious if James Gunn channels it. It's great to see that Margot Robbie's back as Harley Quinn. There's actually some set photo leaks today. I'm excited for that. The bacon, egg, and cheese she kept getting looked great, though. We'll say that.
It did look like a great bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich.
Very good looking sandwich. So Black Mask, not going to go on Trill's list of favorite villains, that's for sure. It's not going to. The slicing of the face off is just interesting. In general.
Why don't they make the whole plane out of the Black Mask?
anything else with movies stick out? Anything you want to talk about from this particular film? I reviewer, not to get too deep here, and we won't, but Chris Stuckman, good reviewer on YouTube, brought up an actually interesting point about the fact that Harley Quinn, you're kind of, again, rooting for and celebrating someone who is kind of like a bad person. And I know the tone of this movie is a lot different than Joker, but he mentioned it's interesting that critically speaking, there's a different vibe with this one, even though in a sense the characters are both just killing, and she definitely killed off the top. She didn't go in the police station and kill people. So there's a much different thing there, because he obviously did legit kill and shoot people in the movie. But I mean, she's still done bad shit. Like, just I thought that comparison was at least thought provoking to an extent. Do with that what you may.
Imagine if she did just like a full Terminator 1 and just went in and murked the entire police station. This would go from like an R rating to a triple R rating, and people would be fucking screaming and yelling about it. And they did the old riot grenades.
I don't know. I don't know if it was specifically Black Mask or the Huntress, but someone else needed to be fleshed out more. Someone else did. Make me care more about the relationship between them, because obviously they don't become the team till towards the end, or make me care more about the person they're going after, because the person they're going after, kind of the real thing with Black Mask, right, is that Black Mask motives and the emotional connection you might have to who he is and what he does, it kind of ties more to Huntress and her family, but we don't know too much about her minus a flashback scene. It's just kind of a weird mix of what you're supposed to care about, where you're supposed to connect. And I liked a fair amount of it. I liked a really good chunk of this movie, but character wise, it unfortunately dragged down most of the reason why I rated it what I did.
Yeah. I think that's it. This is fun. This is entertaining. I definitely think, considering everything that's out the theater right now, if you're thinking about seeing a movie this weekend, you should see it. Because at the same time while we're talking about it, I've seen people give this high marks. So it could also be very subjective, as movies tend to be, in terms of your own personal taste, of whether or not you really like it just on it or dislike it completely. Because I've seen reviews all across the board, which I don't think is atypical with the DC movies. Because there are some Batman versus Superman stands out there. There are people that will stand for Justice League. So yeah, I mean, check it out. Like it's definitely worth supporting, and it's definitely like, I think it's one of those things. Is like as much as like a 65, you know, and we've been shitting on it the whole time. Like I would be excited if they made another one, because I think they got another shot and they figured out what worked and what didn't work. Like I think they could get it down to a enjoyable, really enjoyable product just by focusing on what they got right in this movie, because they got stuff right, and when it was right, it was good.
Yep, I would definitely agree on that. She'll be back as Harley Quinn, just in a different movie in the new Suicide Squad, which if that one stinks, probably stop making Suicide Squad movies, I think, at that point. At least for a while.
Hey, here's my new impression. It's a new character I've been working on.
Well, I bet you're wondering if I broke up with the Joker.
It's Farley Quinn.
Oh,
you guys didn't get it?
Nah, that's a good one. I like that one.
It's not the world's best Chris Farley impression. However, very funny. If you can nail down that Chris Farley impression, you got a good one going. You got something.
Oh, yeah. Just
got something.
Execute me.
I think I can think of one on the spot. Holy shit, I'm going to come. That's Parlay Quinn. Oh.
Hey, how about this?
Grandpa Joe, I'm going to blow up the chocolate factory.
Say it.
It's Charlie Quinn.
Or I think we've exhausted it.
Hey, what about this one?
Woof, 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 woof.
Oh, no.
Woof.
That's Marley Quinn.
From I like
Marley
that one. That's actually my favorite one. That's the one we should make.
All right.
Yo, bros. I broke up with the Joker and I'm about to go catch some waves. That's gnarly, Quinn.
Okay, so do you like podcasts and do you like berries? That's Shari Quinn. Shari's berries. No, shut up. Don't think about it too much.
Rhyme at best.
Don't think about it too. Don't think about it.
That might have been the last one. That might have been the one that killed it off. Those Shari Quinns might be my favorite.
Oh, enough. So what you got there? Is you put the hops in there and you let it ferment. That's Barley Quinn.
Barley Quinn, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I figured that one was coming.
All right, yes.
All right, yeah, I think we've exhausted it.
There you go. There's your Zillion beer shirt, Barley Quinn.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
That'll do it. That'll push him over the $1 million.
Hey, how about this one? I was a good college quarterback at Notre Dame, and then I played for the Cleveland Browns for a while.
That's just Brady Quinn.
Brady Quinn?
Yep. Well,
yeah. Yeah.
All right, are we done?
Yeah, the creative juices were lost with that one.
Okay, my father made a website where you can look up nude celebs. That's Harley Skin.
I broke up with the Joker, and also I'm a genie. That's Harley Jin.
Oh, yes. Okay, that's my favorite one. That's my favorite one so far. All right.
I broke up with the Joker, and I'm in Stranger Things. That's Harley Finn Wolfhard.
That's the brand now you need to make, Harley Finn Wolfhard.
All right, I'm done.
Movie music moments. Top five. It can be instrumental. It can be orchestral. Can be a song from a movie, can be a song that wasn't made for the movie. Any scene in a movie that involves a song, involves music, is nominated for this list. Top five favorite, a personal list. Kenjack, you go first, then I'll go, then Trill, then the audience. Kenjack, number five, favorite movie music moment.
My number five, it's kind of recent, but I just kind of, for my entire list, I sort of fired from the hip. When Good Vibrations is playing in Us. And the Alexa thing says, now playing, fuck the police. And then like her doppelganger comes and slits her throat. And this is right after Tim Heidecker does the too slow thing when he tries to help her up. I love that. And also like, and I guess like kind of a 1B or 5B, also the I Got Five on It remix from the trailer.
Okay. As a second option. Yeah. Okay. I like that. My number five, these pop into my head real quick. I had six that came to mind. So it was tough cutting one of them. But number five for me is iconic for more than just the song. It's the person singing the song in the movie. And that's Matt Damon. And that is Scotty Doesn't Know from Eurotrip.
Ooh.
An awesome song from a movie that you just a classic song of a Jersey Shore cover band to play at a popular bar. Like I hear that if you go down to Avalon, Jersey, the Princeton, you just fucking hear Scotty Doesn't Know, no matter what 30, 40 year old guy's cover band is on stage. Scotty Doesn't Know. Awesome scene. Matt Damon just fucking rules in it too.
Oh yeah. Like you're saying though, like, people forget, like people like remember the cameo and they remember the song, but they don't remember that was actually a funny joke in the movie.
Oh yeah. And then a running gag with the ringtone is probably the best one.
Like a very funny fucking joke in that movie.
Yeah. Trill, number five for you.
Mine's cheating a little bit. Cause it's from Stop Making Sense. But it's Girlfriend Is Better. It's one of the best looks of all time. I love that performance. Like, I love that big suit. I've always wanted a big suit like that to dress up for as Halloween. It's just amazing. Like, anytime. So
the big suit makes the moment?
Yeah. I mean, I associate that song with him coming out and just doing his like weird movements wearing that big suit. You know, David Byrne always looks like he just got transported to Earth when he's performing. And it's an incredible song and an incredible moment. One of the best music movies of all time.
Okay. I like that. The big suit. Hey, if it's a visual cue that puts it up there, why not?
Yeah.
That's a good pick. Audience number five. This one is from the score of the movie John Williams. That is Duel of the Fates, Phantom Menace. Or Marvel on here. Marvel would be tough. I'd probably say Avengers Assemble or Thor Arriving on Wakanda. That's just the Avengers theme. But one of my favorite Star Wars music moments is the Jedi theme, the Star Wars theme when Rey gets the lightsaber and Force Awakens. The way John Williams scored that movie, fucking
King, fantastic. World's best loser.
Obi-Wan, I am your master, and I also just broke up with the Joker. I am Harley Qui-Gon Jinn.
Oh.
There we go.
On that note, Ken Jack, number four.
My number four is Come and Get Your Love from Guardians of the Galaxy 1. The sequence of him walking around dancing to it, I think it set the tone for the movie, set the tone for the character. And as you guys know, it's one of my, it's still honestly my favorite movie. And I just think it's fantastic. And that whole soundtrack, the entire soundtrack of Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and to lesser effect 2, I just think is absolutely bonkers level good.
I just broke up with the Joker and I'm Star-Lord.
Yep.
I'm Harley Quill.
Mm-hmm. I knew that was coming and that's why I picked it. No.
Oh, okay.
Didn't love that one.
It was a stretch, but he made it work.
Damn it, dude. That's harsh.
Yeah. Tough. These next ones are tough. I have to go with number four. Number four for me is going to be Pure Imagination from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. what does it. I think just the way he sings it, that entire scene, I mean, Augustus Gloop stuffing his fucking face. The way he sings that song plays up just the fantastical nature of that movie.
Well, and there's a longing to it, too. There's like a I don't know, a very, you know what I'm trying to say? It's just like, it's like supposed to be hopeful, but it's also not at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like cynical. It's like a cynical longing.
The one thing in that scene that makes me mad is when Veruca Salt pops open that one thing and it's the sticky goop. Someone that rich wouldn't do that. You gotta be more clean and proper. She's proper. It just drives me crazy. Yeah, that. By the way, the one that I had to leave off, which I hated, was Lord Knows by Meek Mill from Creed. The Creed montage is so fucking good. With the motorbikes. God, it's fucking cool. Trill, number four.
Number four is Don't Stop Me Now from Shaun of the Dead.
Damn.
I mean, I associate that movie with that song and that scene specifically, because that is the 1,000 mile per hour Queen song, just boom, boom, boom. And to fucking put it in that scene where they're just tearing shit up.
Wailing on that bar owner with pool cues.
There are two very, very strong candidates that are Queen songs.
Yes. I know the other one. I didn't put it on my list.
It's not on the audience's list either, or mine. But it was definitely voted on by many. Audience number four is Shallow from A Star Is Born. Anyway, I had a lot of goosebumps watching that, and they did a great job incorporating the audience in that. And it's a very good scene. Ken Jack, number three.
Okay, Trill. I just broke up with the Joker, and I founded the Bare Naked Ladies. I'm Harley Erzberon.
1 week since you talked to me, tilted your head and say your name's Harley.
Yes. Okay. My number three is Layla and Goodfellas. The whacking scene of Joe Pesci, just a fucking awesome moment and a great song on its own. Awesome, awesome fucking song.
Yeah, that's one I left off my list because I was overthinking it. I was, because like that is great, but like it's not one of my personal favorites. But I think in the pantheon of songs to movie moments, that's definitely top 10. Because mm-hmm. you put 10 things in a pantheon. Everybody knows that.
You do. My pick, this is the only like really recent movie on my list. And that's by Black Way and Black Caviar. It's What's Up Danger from Spider-Verse. Mm. That's the leap of faith scene. Tweet every time. I can get a couple thousand each time because people just fucking love that scene, as they should. Artistically speaking, the visuals are off the charts. The breaking of the glass, it's a very motivational kind of, again, goosebumps type thing in the movie, and the song's awesome. The whole leap of faith scene with What's Up Danger is so well done and is one of the better movie scenes in recent memory, just period, even beyond movie music. Trill, number three for you.
Number three for me. It's Goodbye Horses from Silence of the Lambs.
On your list, but I should have known.
Oh, yeah. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. It is an incredibly creepy song, and an incredibly creepy moment in the movie where Buffalo Bill does the tuck, and then he you know does his lines, which I'm going to save you that one, but just the opening dings of that song, ding 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 ding, it's fucking gives me tingles.
Great pick. Again, I wish I would have called that. I should have known. Should have known that you would have had that on there. All right, moving on to the audience. They picked You Make My Dreams, Little Hall & Oates, 500 Days of Summer. Yeah, that's a very good pick. I didn't have it on mine. That probably a top 10 for me.
I gotta say, I just broke up with the Joker.
What's the punchline?
I tried to come up with one on the fly.
I just broke up with the Joker and spending some time with my family. Harley Vin Diesel.
I thought that was a Stallone impression.
They're very similar tones for me because I have a very high voice.
I was thinking, like, that's the guy going to be. Yeah, that's a really good pick from the audience. When you bring a big fucking marching band into your scene, gonna like it every time. By the way, I did say no other recent movies. I do not have La La Land in here, but I do love that. As a collective, I love that album. I wouldn't know which one to pick. Like, nothing sticks out as my big, big favorite. Even though I'm now gonna have City of Stars stuck in my head. Ken Jack, number two, top five favorite movie music moments.
My number two, I talk about it a lot. It's I'll Make a Man Out of You from Mulan. Great scene. Still love singing it with my friends. Like, again, I say it every time we mention it. I could text, let's get down to business in my group chat, and the rest of my friends will recite the entire song. And that's just the nostalgia I have tied to that song. That's how much I like it.
Cool group chat.
So, dude, it's the lamest group chat you'll ever see in your life. It's so bad.
Again, that's another one I would not have guessed, but I feel dumb for not guessing it because you've mentioned that before. My number two for my favorite sports movie, I think maybe the best scene in the movie. Obviously there's a big reason why I like it, but I think if you take out the Cleveland Indians bias, it holds up with any sports list. And that's the Wild Thing moment from Major League.
I hate this fucking song.
Obviously, I'll say Goosebumps again. I have a bit of a different reason for that because I am a fan of the team. So it's kind of that like cool moment. But when he fucking walks out of that bullpen, man, and they're just dancing and screaming Wild Thing. It's just an awesome. They're in the old Brewer Stadium. Just an awesome scene. Wild Thing is, I was talking about putting number one. Number one's probably an obvious choice for those who know this podcast well. But Wild Thing, very firm number two. And I think music movie moments, this is one of the two that immediately pops in my head. So number two is a fitting spot for it. Trill, number two.
Number two for me is In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel from the John Cusack movie Say Anything. Parodied and montaged or homaged or whatever you want to call it.
I bet they parodied it in the 41-year-old virgin who knocked up Sarah Marshall and felt super bad about it.
I love that trailer. I love that shit. I how they're just like, oh, fuck it. Just put Yoda in there.
Just
Yoda.
She gives birth to the Verizon Wireless Can You Hear Me Now guy.
Yeah.
So the
Sprint guy.
Bradley Kaya, the his father wrote the movie, quote tweeted the trailer today, said, "No, my father does not do drugs, nor was he on any when he wrote this movie." It's a crazy trailer. We tweeted it out. If you haven't seen it, I tweeted it out today. It parodies 40-Year-Old Virgin, Sarah Marshall, Twilight, Superbad, Dr. Phil, Star Wars, Yoda, again, 2010. Nothing from Star Wars had been out in 6 years. Nothing would come out for another 5 years. They hadn't even announced it. Slumdog Millionaire, To Catch a Predator, Verizon, Can You Hear Me Now, Guy, and Dos Equis. Sorry, I completely derailed that trail, but I had to.
No, I
said parody.
It was incredible parody.
Yeah. But yeah, In Your Eyes, I feel like if you had a nationwide vote, that would end up being top five.
I think so.
It was top 10 for the audience,
especially with older people like myself. It's a great song too, but it just it's such a fucking melodramatic, teen angsty, romantic comedy type moment. Just to, you know, play that song out of a boombox.
Well, what was the parody movie we were looking at last year where it was, I think it was a Marvel parody movie, but it was Shawn Michaels was Yoda and 9/11 Kevin was in it.
Yeah, it was Dad Man.
Yeah, it was like it was a superhero movie where they were almost too scared to actually parody anything.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then I remember just Shawn Michaels doing a lot of, I already spelled Kevin Razanizzi's Ross name wrong.
Steve Ranazizzi. Yeah, that's I'm not.
9/11 Kevin should, his name should show up. But all right, so I want to see what this movie was, because it was Avengers of Justice Farce Wars, and he was Super Bat.
That's right, Super Bat.
he was Super Bat, and Shawn Michaels was Master Yoga, and Simon Rex was Dark Jokester.
Oh.
And there's Beaverine.
Beaverine. Beaverine.
That's what we forgot. And there's Emperor Purple Guy.
Who was Beaverine again?
Oh, and then someone played Rhea instead of Ray. So they actually did parody more than I thought.
Amy Smart was in this. Somebody get Amy Smart a better job than that.
Tony Cavallaro.
Good actress.
Amy Smart was in this. My God. What in the
Beaverine.
Beaverine.
You just said, like, we said, my God, you sound like my dad watching his favorite team blow like a 14 point lead.
My God.
Why do I pay money to see
this? I don't know if what's worse, the 41-year-old virgin who knocked up Sarah Marshall and felt super bad about it, or the Starving Games. The Starving Games, I don't know. I will say the guy who does the Seth Rogen impression in the 41-year-old virgin knocked up Sarah Marshall, I have to say the full name, knocked up Sarah Marshall felt super bad about it. Very good Seth Rogen impression. I actually thought it was pretty good.
I like that he felt super bad about it. Yeah. What was the McLovin one in the trailer? He's like McLovin butt.
hold on. So the McLovin character is actually McAnal Lovin.
That's not even a joke.
That rules. I love that.
They just stuck the name Anal between the middle of his name.
Stuck it all right.
I'd say they watched Rookie of the Year, and they're like, Funky Butt Lovin'? I can work with that.
Yoda. I think they have the Coors Light commercial twins in it, too. I forgot that
And
part.
The twins!
What an awesome commercial. The whole, they had many commercials, but that's the one that started it all. All right. Trill, I derailed you, but In Your Eyes, great pick. Audience picked The Riff Off from Pitch Perfect. That was a No Diggity one. That's probably the most popular part.
Yeah, that's got to be the one.
Ken Jack, favorite movie music moment.
So this is a cheat. I'm definitely cheating here. There's not necessarily music playing during this, but it's the Michael Keaton TLC references and other guys. That's my pick. It's my favorite recurring bit in the entire movie.
and it makes me laugh every single time I watch it. Can't help myself every single time. And like, I'm not a TLC guy either. It's just every single time
he's speaking lyrics, I very much allow this.
It's so fucking funny. It's such a funny gag. It's, I don't even know how they thought of something like that, but it fucking kills me every time.
This case is talking to us. I'm a peacock, Captain. You got to let me fly on this one.
You know what, Terry? Let's just settle this. Peacocks don't fly.
They fly a little. They get a real running
about
start.
As much as a penguin. One more thing. Do me a favor. Don't go chasing waterfalls.
Is that accidental, or are you trying to quote TLC on purpose?
I don't even understand the reference.
You don't understand what you said?
I don't know what that is. Get out.
Fantastic stuff. That's really good. I think Riggle told us. I think he told us, he said, like, it was Adam McKay who started it, and then Michael Keaton continued it. It was, like, initial joke, and then Keaton just kept doing it, like, ad-libbed, improv'd, I guess. My number one, you have any guesses?
My number one guess would have been for you the highway song from La La Land.
Yours is the Ocean's 11.
Claire de Lune?
Claire de Lune.
That's correct. That's number
nice.
One.
Good call, Trill. Yeah,
But that's not like, I don't know. I didn't want to pick something that was just made for the movie. $100 Million Chinese Man, I think is what the title of the track is called. But that is up there. But no, the Claire de Lune scene is, you got to go to Vegas, you stand by the fountains, and you just hear Claire de Lune playing in your head. People just tweet me that song all the time if it pops up on the commercial or something. And actually, we tweeted out earlier and someone tagged me like, this is going to be your number one. Sir, you were correct. Cheryl, number one correct. Favorite movie music moment.
It's Promontory from The Last of the Mohicans. Another one that's no surprise. It. Hit right, but you put Promontory into that with the build up and then the fight, and you know,
guy jumping off the cliff.
I was just getting thrown off the cliff, and that that sledge axe, and oh my god, it's such a climactic scene. I mean, I love that song. I own many different versions of it, and it gets me hyped up just the way the song, like the way it starts with the. I'm assuming it's a cello. It could be a viol. I don't know what those instruments sound like. And then just gets into the crescendo of the song. Like, I'm going to the dermatologist tomorrow. I'm a little nervous. I'm getting some skin checked out. I'm going to listen to Promontory on the way over there to hype me up.
You get hyped up for the dermatologist.
I get nervous, dude. And medical appointments make me anxious.
Is it, fair enough.
As I'm sure people will realize when they listen to our Final Destination review, I worry about everything.
Hmm.
Yeah, which, by the way, we're going to have to, like, redo that or something. I don't know. We just legitimately don't have it. So
it's gone for life.
Yeah.
Damn.
That was a huge bummer. I don't know. We don't have a producer, obviously. So our ability to, like, if we look away from the monitor that we swing the monitor from the – if we're recording in the studio, we swing the monitor around. And I don't know what happened. I don't know if it stopped or something. And we were in the zone for Oscars, too. We were wired. Please.
Insert like, two quarters to process video.
Yes, and we ran out of coins.
Can't emphasize enough how like Frankenstein rigged all of the technology in the BarstoolSports.com offices. It's so bad. Shout out to Tech Guy Andrew Tech Guy Andrew's awesome, but all business Pete. I mean, come on. We could hear the radiator going off during the entire podcast. It was something.
Jeff keeps one lacy rugged drive that downloads all our episodes too, and the rats just ate it.
Mm-hmm. The literal rats. They found dead rats today in the office.
They went full rat mode and ate the lacy rugged drive.
The rugged drive, yep.
Audience number one is Don't Stop Me Now, Shaun of the Dead.
Hell yeah. Great pick.
Things off their list: Twist and Shout, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Avengers theme from Infinity War, Wakanda, Boats and Hoes, Superbad, Bohemian Rhapsody, Wayne's World, There's the Other Queen, In Your Eyes, Say Anything, Old Time Rock and Roll, Risky Business, Sweet Child of Mine, Step Brothers Again, Stuck in the Middle with You, I almost said Reservation Dogs, Reservoir Dogs, and then Living in America, Rocky IV.
I got one. Hip to Be Square from American Psycho.
Yeah, I had that on mine. Mine just got left off. I had that. I had the La La Land Highway scene. I mean, Hakuna Matata is just like, I feel like, too stereotypical almost. Oh, the heart, when they play Heart and Soul on the piano and big. I like that scene.
I also like the scene from Ghost. Unchained Melody.
Yep.
Where's My Mind from Fight Club? I think Jeff said that.
I didn't say that. But
oh, okay.
Yeah, that's glad another you said good it. One.
Yeah, but the Huey Lewis stuff in American Psycho just is my favorite part of the movie.
Yep.
And I don't love that movie. I think it's okay. But, like, it does make sense he would like Huey Lewis, because I like Huey Lewis. And that is a fucking psycho thing to like.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. You psycho.
Yeah, that is a big miss. Power of Love, that, okay. Power of Love, Back to the Future, that was a miss.
When was Power of Love used in Back to the Future?
Right.
The end. Wait,
are you really? Right? Are you fucking with me?
Yeah. Like, no. Remind me. It's been so long.
It's the opening when he's on the skateboard.
Okay. Yeah.
And he's okay. No. Okay.
But I don't think that counts. Okay. Like, I don't think that counts. Like, an opening is like one thing, right? But like, that's not an iconic scene. So I understand. Like, the song's great.
I don't know. In terms of the attachment to the movie.
Like, if he would have played Power of Love instead of the Chuck Berry song, and that was the new sound Huey Lewis was looking for, even though that timeline does not make sense at all.
That's that. Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, okay, because when you think of movie songs, you think of Danger Zone, right? I mean, like, Danger Zone, like, you can't count, man. That's the intro, right?
Well, I mean, you can't. Just on my list, like, I associate with scenes, and right, so like, an opening is a scene, but like, when you think Back to the Future in terms of like the pivotal scenes in the movie, I don't think of the opening. But when I think of like my songs,
yeah,
the ones I picked, like Promontory,
you make great picks.
That's the denouement. Is that the right word for it? I don't know. Let's just say it's a denouement. It sounds good.
Sure. All right. That's that. That's a wrap. What are we reviewing? Oh, what are we reviewing next week? Ken Jack, are you on the show next week?
Yeah.
Are we going international, fellas?
Folks, we're going to get our first international pod. But yeah, I'll be around. I mean, unless the Wi-Fi is horrifically bad down in San Jose, I should be good to go.
We might have a guest. We'll see. I reached out. We're going to have a guest. The guest will be on soon. So it's Sonic the Hedgehog next week. We'll probably do video games we want to see as movies. Sunday, I don't know if we're going to do Final Destination. Look, here's the thing. I don't know how good we can do with Final Destination twice. It might be lost in the abyss. It may be something we have to wait a while to do again.
I'll ask our tech guy. He's recovered it every time we've lost something, so we'll see if we can find it.
Oh, I looked on Monday. It's gone.
Like the file itself is gone, or?
Yeah, the whole end was just not there. So we'll see. We'll probably do a new movie. We'll wait a while, then we'll do Final Destination again. We got to put a little gap in between.
All right.
So we can kind of reset. That's fine. We got a lot of good suggestions. You know, let me pull up the suggestions real quick. We'll do a little treat here at the end. Maybe we'll just pick it right now. Where's the old nostalgia review? All right, let me read off a couple of the suggestions. Someone said The Town, City of God. Someone said Mac and Me, Tough. Oh, he said he was trolling. Hardball. Psych. Hardball is another option. Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
We should do Velocipaster, I'm telling you.
Oh, that's right. Where is it streaming, though?
Prime Video.
It is. Okay. You can just stream it?
Yeah. You don't have to rent it or anything.
All right, we might do the Velocipaster.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's really, you know what? Incredible. We're going to review the Velocipaster on Sunday. One more drink, one more
check it out. I'm excited. I'm right there watching Miss Maisel anyway.
So yeah, exactly. Well,
Mrs. Maisel.
Watch them at the same time, maybe?
Yeah, do side by side. Yeah, dual screens, baby.
MacBook Red Zone.
Pro, baby.
Yeah. Okay. That's it. Let's wrap things up for Ken Jack. Control Ball and some Jeff Logan. We'll talk to you on Sunday.
Have a good week at the box office.